Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others.
When did you start to have a relationship with Christ? Like, when did that breakthrough happen for you? Because you were in that
circle. When I was 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was saying. And even earlier than that, because I've always heard the voice of God. I've always just like had this sense, this knowing, this sensitivity to spirit, this real sensitivity to spirit. And at 10 years old, I had my best friend at the time, a sleepover. We were in my basement and I was asking him about God because I knew that he, you know, went to church and things like that. And he was like, well, all I know is you just have to accept him into your heart. And I said, well, how do I do that? He was like, well, we got to get on our knees. And we got on our knees and we're like the 10-year-olds in the basement of my mom's house, you know, facing each other. And he was like, do you accept Jesus into your heart? And I said, yes. And right when I said that, and I'm getting them right now, I had these chills come over my body. And like, it was my first like real, like Holy Spirit experience. And even though, you know, I went down a path, and that's the thing, like just because you're saved doesn't mean you're perfect. Just because you're saved doesn't mean you're not going to go through trials. Just because you're saved doesn't mean that you're no longer going to have temptations or sin or whatever it is. So I was saved since 10. Signed, sealed, delivered, eternity stamped. But then I just had some stuff I had to go through. It's still
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Yes, most certainly. And as I mentioned before, I feel like because I haven't gone through so many things because I'm keeping myself from trouble, I only this year I've been searching to make friends. And because I don't know exactly why, but subliminally, I feel like I wasn't even making friends because I was keeping myself safe. I go to work, go to school, then go home and stay away from people and situations. And so not many eventful things happening, but at the same time, I've grown personally through like other things in life. But talking to a lot of people through the podcast, I was like, wow, they have grown like exponentially. And me, I'm just like dancing through life. And so I had to, not really a comparison, because I don't feel like low, but I was like, interesting how it seems like somehow when your life is shaking up, you grow so much on a louder level or bigger, like miles away. But if your life is just like you're dancing through it, it's... And even like when it comes to people with companies, like let's say Jeff Bezos, or probably not him, but like I don't know these people a lot, but I've watched a thing on YouTube about millionaires throughout the last century, before the 2000s, mm-hmm. at least like the top millionaires or even billionaires, and how a lot of people don't know that. They're thinking most billionaires like came out of the room and then their parents were, but it's not true. It seems like the number is like either in the 70%. A lot of people had to work for it, and their parents were, even the Rockefellers, like and other people that I was watching about, how their parents came from Europe and they had two potatoes in their pockets, and then through hard work and hardship and going through the 20s of whatever we went through 20s back then. And that's how they became where they are, because they had to struggle and they had to say, I don't want to go back there anymore. Their classmates who probably were normal, never got what they have. And even them, sometimes they were hiring, because if they stayed in the area, the poor person was hiring the middle class because they became the millionaire. So I've noticed that pattern. That's great.
I'm pretty sure the stat is actually 78%. 78% of millionaires today inherited $0.
Yeah, certainly. And even I would assume that's your position as well, based on what I've read and mentioned.
100%.
You were born a millionaire.
No. Inherited nothing.
Right. Yeah. So, okay. So that's interesting. So when did you, so you had your relationship with Christ at 10, when did you start the path that you are in now? Like, when did you have your second breakthrough or something?
Yeah. When I was completely broken, you know, mm-hmm. I was going to church and things throughout my addiction, you know, I would have bouts of like really, really trying, and you know, I just wasn't able to quit drugs. There was just nothing I could do. But I, you know, at the end of my addiction for the last few months, I was trying everything I possibly could to get clean. I was going to 2 12 step meetings a day. I was going to church twice a week, a Saturday service and a Sunday service. And I was going to a Bible study every single Tuesday. Mm. And I had been living in a homeless shelter, and I got 86 from the homeless shelter for drug use. I was on felony probation because I had been found dead behind the wheel of a car by the police, and they found drugs in the car, gave me a felony. And I was, you know, completely broken and 148 pounds, like I was saying earlier. So, and I'm about 215 now. So I was really, really close to dead. And I'm sitting in this car before Bible study one Tuesday. And I was sitting there and I just told God, I'm like, I'm done. And I remember this feeling of total and complete. I am not doing anything anymore. There's nothing I can do. I'm going to die. I'm going to die alone, homeless, and a drug addict. And I told God that. I was like, I'm not going to this Bible study. I'm not going to these meetings. I'm not going to church. I'm not doing anything anymore. Please just let me die. And I said that out loud.
Mm.
And when I said that, I heard his voice and he whispered to me and he said, it's time, go. And when he said that, I got really angry at him, because there had been all these times in my life where I thought it was time, where, you know, I've literally dumped my dope in a toilet and then woke up the next day and went and got dope, you know? And I'm like, what's different about this time, God? And I'm screaming at him and I'm crying and I'm hitting the roof of the car and I'm hitting the steering wheel and I'm just crying and I'm really upset because I legitimately just want to die. I'm sick of this, God. And mm-hmm. I'm telling him this and crying, and this is going on for minutes. And then he just repeats himself. Like, he lets me get all that out and he just repeats himself. And he said, it's time, go. And I remember getting this sense of, not this sense of like overwhelming Holy Spirit filled power. You know, I got this sense of willingness that I had not ever reached, you know, this sense of no more control of my life. No more, I'm trying everything I possibly can to do this and this and that. It was like, okay, God, whatever you say, I'm going to do. And so I go to this Bible study. I bust open the doors. I'm 12 minutes late. They're in the middle of prayer. And I just interrupt the prayer and I drop down on my knees and I throw my hands up. And I'm like, guys, please help me. I can't stop. I used again. I can't stop. Please help me. And I'm crying. And it's a moment, you know? And, but I remember the difference of this time from every other time I've raised my hand in a fellowship or raised my hand in a church or said this to my Bible study. The difference this time was I wasn't throwing my hands up to a church or a Bible study or a pastor or a fellowship. I was throwing my hands up to God in complete and total surrender, asking for help. Mm-hmm. And my best friend, Brendan, who is the Bible study leader, he comes over to me and he calms me down. You know, he passed me on the back. He's like, hey, let's just get through Bible study, buddy. You know, and this whole time he's walking with me. You know, this dude is walking with me, picking me up from homeless shelter, taking me to lunch, taking me to Bible study, church, and all this stuff while I'm at my lowest, you know, never telling me you need to quit using drugs, you know, just somebody that walked with me through it. And this night, you know, I get through Bible study. And then at the end, one of the elders, Carmen, comes up to me. He's, hey, I just got a word for you. I need to pray for you. And everybody left except for Carmen and George, who's another elder, and Brendan. And Carmen sits me down on this ottoman right in the middle of this room. And George and Brendan are behind me to the right. And Carmen puts his hand on my shoulder and starts speaking to spirits. And this is the first time that anybody's ever done this for me or done this to me, you know? And he's speaking to spirit of addiction, spirit of anxiety, and spirit of this and spirit of that, because he's like looking in my eyes and calling these things out of me, you know? And as he's doing this, I'm legitimately feeling weight coming out of my heart, off of my shoulders, off of my head. And then he starts speaking to the spirit of a cult, because throughout my, you know, I did a whole bunch of stupid things that I thought were just cool or whatever, like throwing up, you know, devil signs and pictures and like different just stupid stuff. And it was a door. And when he started speaking to the spirit of a cult, it actually manifested in me. And I was like, I felt my body like, you know, tightening up, and my face was getting weird and growling and things. And he just kept praying and praying and praying. And he prayed everything out of me. And 5 days later, I am sitting at IHOP, International House of Pancakes, with Brendan, who is the Bible study leader. And he took me out to breakfast. And I have 5 days clean. So I'm stoked. I am like, that's a really big deal at the time, you know. And I'm sitting across from him and I'm talking and, you know, we're having breakfast. And I get a text message on my phone. And I just have this little flip phone. And I open it up and it's for my dope dealer. He's like, hey, bro, I just got some new stuff. It's fire. I'll give you a free 20 to try out. And right when I read that, I felt the spirit enter in through the top of my head, all the way through my body. My toes were tingling. My fingers were tingling. I lost my peripheral vision and all I could see was the phone. And then my thumbs just started texting back. And it wasn't like King James. It was like, ye shall not text me again. Thou hast texted me for the last time. And it was going crazy. And then at the end of the text, it said, and fear the pain you cause your son, because your son has been blessed with the Holy Spirit. And then I feel it leave me. I'm like, what the heck? Because as I was writing it, I couldn't even read it. And I was like, I was looking at it and I read it and I was like, what the heck is that? And I showed it to Brendan. I was like, dude, Brendan, that was not me. I was like, that was not me. And he was like, okay. And I push send. I close it. I put it in my pocket. And as I'm putting it in my pocket, I'm like, dude, I don't know what that was. And I look back up and Jesus is sitting across from me. The entire restaurant had completely disappeared. All I could see was his face. There was a glow coming from behind him. And I immediately knew who it was. I immediately knew it was happening. And I fell with my face to the table and my hand up. I said, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And I came back up and he was gone. And since that moment, all the other spiritual things that I had played with, even though I had a relationship with God, like I played with Hinduism and I owned to Shivaya and Ganesh and was like, literally was, I'm so sensitive to spirit and they're all real. I can tell you, the Bible is clear that there are multiple gods. But I had those experiences. But once Jesus showed me who God is, you know, and who the highest is, and he saved me from everything, then all of a sudden I know who to talk to no matter what. Like, he's the only one I'm talking to, the only one I'm experiencing, the only one I trust. And then I embarked on the 12 steps. Not necessarily a specific fellowship that I was involved with. I went straight out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is used in hundreds of fellowships. But I did the 12 steps as if my life depended on it. And the interesting thing is that even though I was visited by Jesus while I was awake, I met him face to face, my obsession to use drugs was not lifted in that moment. I still was suffering. I still was shaking on days and thinking that I need something in my body because I haven't had 30 days clean and sober since I was 12 years old. So I go through the steps quickly and as if my life depended on it. My sponsor would come pick me up every single morning at 6:30 a.m. from this sobriety house and take me to this movie theater that he managed. And we'd go to the basement and do the work. On day 25, I did my first ever fifth step, which is where we basically, it's a confession to somebody about your whole life, resentments you have, fears you have, sex you've had, and the way that basically you find how you tick, you know, and what's been going on. On day 26, he comes and picks me up, and we're on the way to the movie theater in his 1983 mailman Jeep, and I'm looking over at this beautiful sunrise in Montana, and I have a spiritual awakening that for the first time since I was 12 years old, I had no desire to drink or use. And it was like one day I went from every thought that I had was about how long it's going to be until I use or drink again. That was how it went. And then all of a sudden, those thoughts were completely gone. I no longer have that obsession. I no longer have those thoughts. And then on day 30, my first ever time having 30 days clean and sober since I was 12, and I still have the journal from that day. I'm like, God, I can't believe I got 30 days. You're so good. I'm so grateful. And I've made it, you know. God, it would be amazing if I didn't smoke cigarettes anymore. And I haven't had a drag of a cigarette since day 30. 8 days after that, I hopped on a treadmill. 8 days after a pack-a-day smoking habit, I hopped on a treadmill looking in the mirror, and I ran a mile in 7 minutes and 18 seconds. And the whole time I'm just talking to God, like, let's see what you got. Let's see what you got. Let's see what you got. You know, and since then, I've beat the 6 minute mile over the pandemic. My next goal is to run a mile in 5 minutes, 5.5 minutes. You know, and he's given me this, it's like a limitless pill, you know. Jesus is a cheat code to life. It's like putting an XX00 left, down, up, zero, Jesus, you know, and you have all the master keys to the game, you know. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, and the cool thing is some more things have happened since that testimony. Like I was invited to speak at a it's called Worship on the Rims, and it was in 2020, September 2020, and I went up there and I spoke, and there was like 1,500 people there, and I got a message the next day from that dope dealer that texted me that day, and he reached out for help, you know, and I was giving him some resources and things, and he sent me screenshots from those text messages that day, and it was just, you know, came full circle, you know.
And your recovery date was 2018
or
17? Yeah,
November 6, 2017 was the last time I used.
So, question with that, because you said it, well, not quoting, but basically it has left your life and you haven't thought about them. I've spoken to other people, they say they are in recovery, because I didn't know this term until I was learning. They are recovery and they will always be an addict because it's something they're always struggling or battle with. Would that be your case, or is
that? I think it's something you constantly have to struggle and battle with. I don't agree with that at all. And when I talked about the types of thoughts are completely different. The idea that I can somehow someday drink or use drugs like normal people has completely been smashed. I do not have a thought about maybe I can drink a little bit or maybe I can recreationally use just a little bit of crack. You know, that thought has been smashed. The thoughts that I have now, if I think about drinking or drugging, it immediately goes to, okay, how long am I going to survive? Or, you know, how long until everything in my life is gone? You know, it's been smashed. I don't have the thoughts about how am I going to make this work, because I know that it doesn't and I know that it can't. So I am that because that's the disease. The disease of addiction and alcoholism is having an obsession of how you're going to make it work. And then a phenomenon of craving that once you take a sip or once you do a little line or something, then you constantly have to do it. You have to do more and more and more and more. I have that disease. I've had a clear first step experience. So that's been smashed. I don't think I can use.
Okay. So that's pretty clear that would you say that's most people that like the lie when even in this commercial it says the first time won't hurt, and then it said, and then they show that person under the bridge and it leads to them cannot stop. So it is true that you cannot lie to yourself and say, hey, it's just gonna be one line or for that weekend, you cannot control it. Okay. Yeah. I am grateful that I've just tasted something and I'm like, okay, I'm good. It's mostly because of course with the war on drugs, like those commercials, and I'm like, I don't need to go that path, etc. And also I think mostly it's because of the somehow I've told people about that. They're like, really, you have that reaction even with a little smoking cigarette, whatever, that's crazy. I would have violent rejection from those things, even like smoking a Marlboro Red or none of my anything. And I'm like, so this was like God saving me or whatever, or a different path, let's say. I read you made a post about you. I'm not religious. I just happen to have a relationship with Christ. What do you mean by that?
Kind of what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I think that the religious spirit is one of the, if not the most dangerous to finding faith in Jesus. Because religion has caused so much trauma on the world, has caused so much, people have used this, and I'm holding up a Bible, people have used this in ways to hurt and to control people. And the religious spirit tells you, you have to do this in order for God to love you. You have to do this in order to have a relationship with him. You know, if you do this, he hates you, which is just not true. And it's not in here. It's not in here. And I believe that having a relationship with Christ, having a relationship with the Creator, is more important than what you do to get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't, religion is what is used to divide us. And it's very clear in here also that it says do not denominate. And then what is it called? It's called denominations of Christianity. There's the Catholic denomination. There's the Protestant denomination. There's the and then there's the non-denominational, right? And we just listen to this. And it's very clear in here that we're not supposed to divide the church. And that's what's going on with religion. When we're supposed to be a family that comes together and brings the kingdom to earth. And I just believe very strongly that in this. And I also don't worship this because this is not something to be worshiped. God and Jesus are to be worshiped. And this is a letter on who we are and how we can do that. Because anybody that thinks that you know, worshiping something or someone is low, they haven't experienced it. They haven't experienced worshiping the one who actually created you.
So when you think religion is a necessity, though, because how would someone learn? Granted, you learn the way you did. But I notice not a lot of people are capable, or are they capable? Because it seems like religion need to be in a lot of people's lives for them to walking on a straight path. And without that, they'll feel lost. However, I've noticed some people who are religious and they still, like, we all struggle. We all struggle at certain things in life, but it seems like people who are religious, they're struggling to have a relationship with Jesus, while someone who rejects religion or is not religious have that relationship with Jesus, as you do. Have you, something interesting I've noticed with that. However, I feel like a lot of people would be, they'll be, people would do so much worse without having a religion. I see. What do you think?
I think whatever helps you get a connection and a relationship with God without making it so other people can't. If your religion tells you to hate anybody, you are wrong. I don't care what religion you're in. If your religion tells you to hate anybody, it is wrong. And if your religion is it outcasts people or tells people they're not welcome, you're wrong. There is no gray area there. If your religion, and I go to church, I practice what a lot of people look at as religion. A fellowship is very important. It tells us that we need to get together. We need to meet. You know, that's why we have churches. That's why we get together. That's why we meet. The religious spirit says that the religious spirit is not all inclusive, which the Bible is. The definition that most people use for religion is good, you know, where they go and they practice and, you know, they meet up and they go to church and that kind of stuff. When you go deeper into it, as long as everything is directing you to Christ and a personal relationship with Christ that you then share with other people, as long as it's doing that, it's good.
Okay, so what I'm confused about is, though, so is it having a label, let's say Catholic or Baptist, that's wrong in religion, or is it the gathering? Because it seems like the gathering is not what is wrong, of course, because even in the New Testament, people are gathering, and I don't remember exactly the apostles, but those people, when they wrote the letters, they were saying, hey, why are you fighting with this congregation? And you need to be brothers, etc. But is it having a specific name congregation that's wrong? Or is it the gathering? It doesn't seem like the gathering itself is wrong, but people are... I feel like there's different sects, maybe because the world is so big, or even your city is so big. Like, let's say if I live in New York State, like, it's so big, there have to be different groups, and they probably won't be on the same page because they're so far apart because of culture-wise. That's what I'm confused about with religion.
The most wounds I have heard of come from the churches that you mentioned. The most wounds I hear about in recovery, you know, it comes from those churches. And here's the thing. I have met incredible Christ following lovers of Jesus that are, you know, members of Catholicism or Baptist or Pentecostal or whatever it is that they claim, but they love Jesus and they practice more getting deeper with Jesus, you know, and I believe that it says it in the Bible. There's a lot of things going on in certain churches that is not okay. It's not okay. Telling somebody they're damned if they don't tell a man what they did is not in the Bible. And I think that there's, yeah, the first, because I the first church I went to was a Catholic church, you know? And I want to make it clear that I have a lot of friends that are Catholic that are incredible, incredible followers of Christ that read their Bible, that, you know, pray to God and, you know, all that. My first experience with church was Catholic, went through it. And when I did my first confession, it was the first time that I felt like there was something very wrong. And I had heard the voice of God, and I had heard and experienced God. And when I was sitting across from this man, I didn't see him as someone that was my intercessor to God. Because it says in the Bible that Jesus is my intercessor to God. You know, so I just had this really hard moment, and I stopped going. I didn't go back. Mm.
What is a relationship with Christ? If you can be like direct, specific, or even your experience, what is a relationship with Christ?
Yeah. Personally, one of my favorite things to do is, you know, I've literally actually had things that, like, I've been driving and I've had things on the passenger seat, and I take the things off and I buckle the seatbelt. And then I act as if Jesus is right there, and I talk to him because he is right there. But I make a seat for him. I prepare a place for him that then, you know, shows him I'm respecting and you know, just that he's there. You know, he's always there, but there's certain things I do that get me in a place of, you know, really focused talking with him. I've taken him out to dinner and, you know, actually pulled out a chair and then put the chair in, you know, just because, you know, it reminds me who I'm there with. And then I'll have a conversation with him, you know, and pray. And what it looks like to have a relationship with Christ is always having someone that never has any malintent in your life. Mm. There's someone that you can talk to that has no agenda except for your good. Like, there is, he always has plans that are good for you. And if there's something hard going on and you talk to him, you know, and you remember that this is going to turn into something for your favor, for your good, you know, and for a greater purpose, you know, and that's what it is. It's also a knowing that you're not alone, because that's loneliness is the plague of the 21st century. Because of social media and, you know, all this stuff. But knowing that I always have him with me, you know, and no matter what I do, a lot of people think that he came to condemn the world, but it literally says for God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. He's just here to save your soul. Mm. And that means while you're here also, because your soul is tortured by sin. Sin doesn't mean like, sin doesn't only mean like when you have sex before marriage or when you cuss or this or this or that. Sin is also when you think bad about yourself. Depression is a sin. But that's the thing. That's why sin is not something that damns you. It's not. You have eternity sealed with Christ. He came to save you from that. Because even, like, if you look deep into it, like, even sexual sin, it doesn't do good for you. It doesn't help you. It doesn't help your soul. There's soul ties that happen. There's focus that can be lost. If you're struggling with porn, you know what it does to you.
Mm-hmm. So what is tell us about your book, the synopsis of it, From Chains to Saved.
So From Chains to Saved is a collection of short stories of spiritual experiences I've had through my life that led me into addiction. And then the things that happened, my testimony to get out of addiction, and then some things that have happened in my recovery that are just crazy spiritual experiences that I've had. And it's meant to touch, move, and inspire people to either find Christ or know that it's possible to get off of drugs, because I was in the depths there, and I was addicted to every drug. I tried crack once for 2 months. meth, heroin, all of it, you know. And so it is possible to get off of any of them. You know, Oxycontin. I was prescribed 250 milligrams of Oxycontin a day when I was 20 years old. You know, it's possible to get off of all of it. And the reason why I released my story was to show others that it's possible and that their story matters also. You know, their story, your story matters. And it may be someone else's only opportunity at finding freedom from the misery and pain of addiction. I believe that with everything in me, that everybody that recovers from addiction, there is at least one person that needs their story to get out, period.
Yeah, right.
So I advocate for people, and that's what Recovering on Purpose is. I teach people in recovery how to share their stories powerfully. And I have a new digital course that's going to be released very soon. It's completely finished. Just working on some of the back end stuff. It's called Recovery Speaker, Share Your Story Powerfully. And I teach through modules and videos and worksheets and everything exactly how to formulate your addiction and recovery story and put it together into a powerful message, and then how to and where to share it to reach the most people possible and to use it as a tool to save people from addiction.
Nice. Yes, I was going to ask you about Recovered on Purpose. And I love the word choice there. And I have, sorry, I'm all about like inspirational memes. And I saw a meme that says, live on purpose. And that sounds very simple. It is very simple, but it's a grand thing to actually wake up every day to be on purpose, because I can remember a time where I was on accidental and just not thinking about anything. So recovered on purpose. And I'm glad that you segue into that website there. So why, you can tell us specifically, why is the work that you do important for your life, of course, and as in someone else's life?
For my life, it's important because it's what I was called to do. And if I'm not working on it, I'm getting sick spiritually, mentally, emotionally, because it's been very clearly spoken to me that it's my work while I'm here. The way it happened was September in 2019, I was at a Christian entrepreneurship conference and I was worshiping to Jesus culture the first night. And I'm just like, you know, worshiping, I'm in the crowd or whatever. And then I literally heard God's voice and he said, your new company is called Recovered on Purpose. I was like, huh, okay. And I went like right there on the dance floor or whatever. I whipped out my phone, checked the Secretary of State, got the domain name and everything. And then 5 weeks later, I published my book. You know, I went home because he spoke to me through that conference. And I went home, I sat down and I wrote my book and published it in 5 weeks and it became a number one bestseller. And then since then I've helped other people write and publish books in recovery. Right now, I'm working on the speaking aspect because I believe that that's gonna be able to reach more people quicker. Books are able to reach people in places speaking can't. So my next course is gonna be on publishing books. But it's important to me because I have to do it. And it's important to others because one of the girls that I helped write a book, her name's Brittany Priestley. She wrote the book, Mommy Drunkest. She lost her kids in alcoholism and then she ended up getting them back. And you know, it's her story. And the DA that prosecuted her for her case ended up buying 20 of her books and gives them to women that he's prosecuting that are in the same situation that she was.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
That's the power of us sharing our stories.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's an impact that I get to make third hand, you know, that I'm completely removed from that. But it's happening because I've recovered on purpose.
Wow, that's great. Yes. Yeah, so anyone watching and listening to this, please visit Adam, and I'll put all the links on the show notes, his books, From Chains to Saved and Recovered on Purpose website, as well on Facebook, and his YouTube channel that has, and your story that you shared was very inspiring. And of course, I haven't gone through similar situations, but as a human being who've gone through other things, and it's just inspiring stories. Very, and as you mentioned earlier, you are there to help others not to go through the same path, basically staying in the right path. And they don't need, you don't need to learn life to go through addiction, definitely. And so please tell the audience, I know I've told them, but anything else you can tell us where to find your work and or how to collaborate with you, like names, links, websites, et cetera.
Yeah, if you go to recoveredonpurpose.com, you can subscribe at the bottom and I send you a free digital copy and audiobook of From Chains to Saved. You can also get it on Amazon if you want a hard copy. You can also actually buy it on recoveredonpurpose.com and I'll sign it and send it to you. Facebook, Recovered on Purpose. I would love to see you over there. And I actually have, so my friend Logan posted that video that he shot of my story because he has a bigger YouTube channel. I also have a YouTube channel, Recovered on Purpose, that you can follow there. I have a podcast on there about 40 episodes or something like that. Yeah, would love to see you on anything. You know, if you're listening, I just want you to know that you're loved no matter where you're at, no matter what you're doing or what you're hiding or any of that. You are absolutely fully and completely loved exactly how you are right now. Don't forget that. And you're always able to return to God. He loves you and he's right there with you.
Nice. Great. Thank you so much again for being on here with me. I know you have a busy schedule and then you're doing all this great work. So I do appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Yeah. Awesome.